Welcome to Into the Well. I'm your host, Ryan Wilms. I started this show as a place to share my experiences and my journey towards living authentically and mindfully, and also to learn from those who are truly walking the path, healing themselves and inspiring others. By balancing the mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual, we can learn to live in harmony with ourselves and our environment. We'll be exploring different tools and modalities used to create sustainable well-being for a fulfilling life. So thank you for joining me. On this episode of the podcast, I get a chance to sit down with Mauricio Diaz, one of the co-founders of Air Libre, a running adventure retreat organization that he founded a few years ago. He's also a Lululemon ambassador, father, and overall inspirational man. It's been great to connect with him over the last couple of years, and following what he's doing with Air Libre especially has been really inspiring for me. And just seeing what they do through the medium of running. On this podcast, we dive into his upbringing in Mexico, traveling to Canada as a young boy, and how that sort of gave him the courage to explore the world and explore the world through running, and what that's meant to him and where that's going with him and his future, with his business and personally. Enjoy. All right. Well, welcome to the podcast, Mao. It's great to have you and connect with you over the last, I guess, year or two, you know, and before that, seeing what you're doing with Air Libre has been really inspiring and feels quite unique from what's out there in the world. And really impressed with what you've been building and growing.
Thank you so much, man. Since we've been talking, you know, as you said, like maybe 3 years now, maybe. It's always, I'm always also surprised and I guess of what you've built with Into the Well podcast and then the whole thing. It's really good. So it's always been, I've always wanted to connect and now here we are. So I'm really happy about it.
Well, I think, you know, for myself and for people listening, it'd be great to hear a little bit more of your sort of journey growing up. What that was like, how sport played a role in that. And then kind of getting into your career and sort of that journey.
For sure, man. I mean, I am from Mexico City. I was born in the south part of the city, more in the, like the suburbs. While growing up, you know, I did a lot of sports, I jumped from tennis to soccer and then, I mean, sometimes people can't imagine, but there was an ice hockey ring near my home. So I played ice hockey, even though I live in Mexico City. I did a bit of everything, not only like even to like paintball. And like, I guess every probably 2 or 3 years as I grew and maybe something new came up, I just switched and tried other stuff. Now, also, of course, supported and by my parents as well. They really knew that, you know, being, you know, moving and doing sports is something that's critical to like your development. No? So they were pretty supportive in that regard. No? And it's interesting because I like running, while growing up, I really didn't properly run. But my dad did. So my dad, you know, it's been, you know, he's run for maybe now more than 30 years. And when I was a kid, there's very good memories of me, my sister and my mother, like going to races, to cheer him, you know, to try to spot him on from, you know, the, like a bridge or and stuff, or creating, you know, the signs to support him and so I guess I'm pretty sure being exposed to that also like somehow, you know, got stuck back in my mind. Because then eventually, you know, like it was much later on when I started college, that I began to like run, like properly like run. So I studied outside of Mexico City. I had the fortune to study this like sort of international program in it was called international marketing. So this program sort of forced you to spend most of your time studying in different places, no? And that's where I my running journey began, because I mean that city was I didn't know it before, so and I wanted to start to, you know, just be in shape. My number one reason that point in my life was just like to try to keep in shape. But then doing that in a new space, it became a very quick way of understanding and knowing a city that was unknown to me. And very quickly, I started to have fun by trying to find different routes and trying to, you know, run through different neighborhoods and really get a better, deeper grasp of the space I was studying in. I got hooked. No, I got hooked. and of course, you know, like it's always the very natural process of, well, now, you know, there's races and there's 10Ks and stuff like that. So probably, yeah, signed up for, you know, a first 10K and you know, trained and then ran and you know, it's interesting how early on when you start running, every new distance seems like, like a challenge that you don't think it's possible, but then you do it and then you find out that there's a bigger distance. And then you do that, and then you find out there's a bigger distance, and then you do that, and then today it seems like there's no limit, you know. You know, even today you find out there's, I don't, you know, 200 mile races, and when you began, you thought 10K was like, you know,
yeah, the 3100 mile race in New York.
And then, like with this opportunity and with this program, I went to Germany. I lived in Germany for like a year and a half, and that's when I ran my first marathon, actually, in Barcelona, sometime in March. I can't really remember the year, but like maybe like 12 years ago, 13 years ago. But then being in Europe and training for my first marathon in like always new spaces and new places, just became something that I really started to dig and love. No, you know, it's so easy to travel within once you're in Europe with those like low fare airlines. So, you know, I was able, and I had a lot of friends all around, so I could just crash friends and easily get there. And as soon as I would, you know, land in a new space, the first thing you would do is just go out for a run, you know? And many times just take a map and then you know, try to follow my curiosity and explore the city. And the great thing is I remember, you know, like if I was with a friend, you know, you run, come back, and then, well, you know, we have breakfast or whatever, and then you're ready to start the day, and maybe you're with the friends that didn't do the run. And once you're out the door, you become the local expert. Like, oh, yeah, I know where this, like a sick bakery, because I just saw it. And, oh, yeah, I know where we are. Like, let's turn here, because there's, and so, yeah, I mean, and that translated, and that's, like, a big, big part of what we do nowadays, you know, with Aire Libre. Discovering the world through running is just, it's just the best way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I've had, you know, I'm very much a creature of habit when it comes to like running routes wherever I am. But when I was in Vancouver in 2015 is when I joined like a marathon training group. And so we're going I'd been living in Vancouver for like 6 or 7 years, but I just started seeing parts of the city I'd never seen before. And it was very cool in that way. And I think there's a couple cities like Paris, going there regularly for work over the years, and then running. It's just like, yeah, you get to know the city and the places in such a unique way. I think it is a really cool experience that we miss out on a lot. And even just like at home, you know, like I was saying with being in Vancouver and, you know, there's probably so many amazing runs around LA that I just have never gone on because I just go on the same routes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that happens, no? And that's like, it's always, lately I've been, you know, trying to tell people like next time, you know, really, really just go out and instead of making right that you always do, just make a left.
Right.
And see how that feels and where that takes, you know? And you're going to be surprised. I mean, you're going to be surprised because, you know, it's a matter of when you run, you know, in frequent routes, you're both, no, your mind, your energy, your body, your spirit is already knows the energy of that route. But you already know of the things that are around. So I mean, of course you can exercise to avoid it, but mostly, or I guess the tendency, if you do things frequently, the same thing frequently, is that you start not being really present because all of the stimulus is not new. You already know everything, so your mind is very easy for your mind to go again. You know, to go and think about, you know, what you have to do in the net, you know, in the afternoon, the things you haven't done, the things, and because there's no really new inputs coming in. You've already rendered everything. While if you make a left, you know, and if you make some, you know, the turn you've never done before, then you'll automatically, you know, will start paying attention and being present of like, you know, wow, this building, or, you know, wow, there's a hole here. And then, and if you progress that way, runs that you, when you explore automatically by default, there's no other way, but you will have to be much more present. And it's something that, you know, I mean, you've explored this a lot, but it's something that it's, you know, I mean, not only very something that you enjoy, and it has also has great benefits, no? In terms of like mental health and stuff. No? So yeah.
Yeah. I find like that the most clear, like, example of that for me is like running on the road versus trail running.
No.
Where it's like every rock and root and turn, you really have to be super present with that versus getting into the rhythm more on the road. And I think both definitely have their merits as well, because there can be something valuable about getting into a little bit more of that zone on the road and practicing getting, you know, staying present in something like that where there is less, you know, distraction or presence mm-hmm. required even. So yeah, I think the mix is good, and definitely taking the left versus the right you always take is good advice to do.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. I might have to listen to that this week. So you're traveling and living in these different places while you're going to university and kind of discovering a running practice of your own in a new way. And then did you go into a career in marketing coming out of college?
Yeah. After Germany and Europe and all, I went to the States, and I was like for a year in Miami, and I was still part of my, you know, college and like internships that I did. And after that, I was like for a year traveling in Southeast Asia, still studying and still running and exploring. But a year or so of in Southeast Asia, then eventually I got back to Mexico City to just finish and then started to work. And yeah, I did first work at an agency, like a creative agency that mostly worked with like brands in the, like fashion brands, and I was sort of like digital strategist. It was like small agency. So I got to learn a lot and was responsible from, you know, like from my sort of say first job to do a lot of stuff. And then I had two other jobs after that before I co-founded Aire Libre, where I specialized more in what's growth hacking, no? and working more in software companies and trying to do more than, you know, branding and brand building and stuff, doing more technical like optimization experiments and working with with developers and stuff to try to, you know, retain more users or grow more users. And so it was a great learning experience doing that in companies that, you know, were small and then that grew fast. And I was part of that those processes. So that gave me a lot. But what's interesting is that while I was at these other jobs, Aire Libre Running had already started. It's a huge fortune and that we are where we are today, because it was never really planned. You know, it's that I always say this, but it's like the very cheesy thing that we followed our passion, you know, we followed our hearts, and me and my other two co-founders, Dan and Emme, we just really, really, really loved and did this regardless. We were out all the time adventuring, running, you know, documenting and just trying to, you know, transmit this sort of way of looking at the world and understanding it. And so we did that already, and just we started to do it a bit more properly. And so parallel to my, you know, my jobs and stuff, Aire Libre began. It began with this big adventure of running 90 kilometers along the Sea of Cortez in Sonora. That's like on the other side of the Baja Peninsula, and through, you know, the lands of a local tribe, the Seri people. And Dan, who's a co-founder, who's like documentary photographer and this great creative, captured the whole thing. And some really, really good content and stories came out. And that's how basically how Aire Libre was born, where when, you know, we had this amazing story to tell and we put it out. And it was very well received, and of course we could not stop. No, that was just like a push for us to like, hey, I mean, if we're already doing this, and now if we do it a bit more seriously, look what's happening. Let's keep digging. No, let's keep on having fun and see where these roads take us. No, and eventually, just 2 years after, we were able to quit our jobs and start fully working and operating Aire Libre Running.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's always like such a nice way for companies to be born, is out of that sort of passion, and you're just doing it anyways, and then you find a way to make it like viable. I want to kind of go back as well to, like, you know, you got to live in so many different places while you're doing your education, you know, from Europe to Miami to Southeast Asia. And, you know, I think for some people, depending on like your circle of friends, traveling the world is pretty normal. But for the majority of people, you know, that's pretty, pretty diverse. And as somebody who's in there, you know, around 20 years old, like going to all these different places and studying and doing internships, you know, that's like massively outside of people's comfort zones. And so, yeah, I was curious, like, you know, with your upbringing with your parents, did you travel with them growing up? Like, what sort of gave you the confidence to go and explore the world in that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, the parents who have always been completely supportive and have, I guess, always understood that, you know, under the possibilities, if we, sister, or we're exposed to, you know, travel and cultures and stuff, that was definitely going to add value to our lives and just, I guess, prepare us as human beings, no? Since I was very, very young, probably, I don't know, around maybe 10 years or so, that's when I guess it all began. Like my mother, you know, really sent me on my own to like a summer camp in Canada. And, you know, when I was, and I guess it, yeah, the story, if I remember correctly, like before that, I was a bit to, I was a bit, how, what's the term? I was very close to her, and maybe not precisely not as you know, adventurous or not as, you know, I didn't like to, I guess, yeah, expose myself as much. So probably she saw the, that it was good for me to go. And like, so, but you know, this, she always tells me like, you didn't want to go. You were like, you were begging us not to, you know, but you know, eventually I went and after that, you know, month there in Canada, like that, I guess really, really had an impact and changed a lot of me. Cause I came back and pretty much told my mother, hey, next year I want to go back, but now I want to come back like the 3 full months, you know? I guess the, like what I got to experience and that's why I guess I have like a really profound and love for Canada, because it has always been like in my life, and it's, I don't know, the people, the, you know, Canadians and the country is just so amazing. And since that point, you know, I went back, you know, probably next summer, and from that point on, when there were the possibilities, I would always be supported to go travel and go be exposed to different cultures and all. Like, I studied in a German school in Mexico City, you know, for example, and that was since kindergarten until like high school, and it's not, I don't have any like direct ties to like to Germany or like, you know, from family. I mean, if you dig, you might have find a connection, but it was a bit of that as well. You know, I guess it was a bit of my parents knowing that if I was just exposed to different stuff, like different ways of thinking and while I was at the same time in another culture and stuff, that would just, I guess, make me a bit more, I don't know, complete or more understanding or whatever, no? So yeah, that's a great part of it, no? of that love for being out and exploring it, that push that and that support from.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. You know, I think it's so much more common to have that bond with the mother and stay close and be sort of protected and not have that sort of experience for so many people. You know, in some ways it's kind of like a rite of passage to sort of break that bond a little bit around the age of like 10, 12, 14 is so important for, and you know, it just shows with the sort of confidence and, you know, entrepreneurial attitude that you have, like to take a risk, to go out, to put yourself in these like foreign places with new people and just put on your runners and go explore, like, you know, that growth that's, you know, helped come from that sort of experience over time is so cool. So that's, that's cool to hear. Whereabouts in Canada did you go for those camps?
It was in near Ontario, in Ontario, and like, in a really small town. I mean, the camp was called, Billowood. And it was near a small city called Salisbury. Tiny place. To echo on what you were just saying, I mean, of course, studying and college and everything gave me, you know, going to class and all gave me some learnings, but I can definitely attribute like 80% of more of my learnings more to like the being alone and exposed, and I mean all of that year and something in Southeast Asia, I was on my own, completely on my own, and moving from place to place, and it got to the point in extreme, you know, when, you know, it was funny, like when I was a kid I didn't want to separate from my mother, to a point now where I was traveling in Southeast Asia sometimes, you know, my parents didn't even really know in which country I was in, because I was just like off the radar and just moving, and I guess just during that period witnessing so much and living so much gave me that also understanding that everything's going to be okay. Really, that life is, you know, that you don't really need it. You don't really need anything, you know, you in life, because life as it is, it's okay. And it gives you that confidence and that perspective that, and it also, I mean, of course, this is a work in progress because, you know, we come back and, but you don't really have to strive to have or to build or to do, or, you know, life as it is, it's just perfect. And if you sort of, have that understanding, and that's your sort of base of how you then work, then it does, you know, taking risk, it's not really a risk, because you already know that if you fail or whatever, you're still alive, you're still breathing, you're still here. And I mean, of course, all of this, what I'm saying, it's completely, based off, I mean, we come from great privilege, no? Like probably, you know, the life experiences that I have had and all, it has definitely been a very, very privileges, the great majority of the world maybe is not in the same position to experience that. That's what really taught me most of during that period of my life, no?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is very true. And it's like kind of getting out of our own way and allowing things to just unfold. And it's just another experience. Some are going to be nicer than others, and some are going to be, they're all going to be different, but just kind of allowing that flow of things and, you know, generally will be okay. I'm curious as well, like when you went to Canada, you know, for these couple months in the summertime, like the culture between Canada and Mexico is quite different. And I haven't spent a ton of time on the East Coast, but at least on the West Coast, like there is not a very large Mexican population. So I'm curious to know like what your experience was like as like a young boy going to this, you know, going to Canada basically, and probably not having too many other Mexican kids there. And like, what was that experience like, in terms of that sort of like culture and, lack of sort of familiar faces?
Yeah, it's funny because I was definitely it was me and two other Mexicans in the whole camp, you know, but we were probably the first Mexicans to have ever been in that camp.
Right.
And I guess what was really interesting and great experience was that we were very exotic, you know, I was probably the only brown skinned person in that whole camp or in that whole town. So we were seen as, you know, what, like exotic persons. but that exoticness was, from at least I completely received it that way. It was good, you know, cause people were interested in something that was different. And something that was new, so it was, and I mean, I guess it helped maybe that I make friends easily, so if you added that like special exoticness and then without this, you know, ability of just being open and talkative and being, you know, being easy to make friends, it was a great, I that's why I loved it so much, because I was so welcomed and everybody was like, you know, a lot of people were interested in learning about, you know, who we were and whatnot, and so we built amazing friendships and very easily, and there was actually, I just remembered, because I haven't thought of this in a while, but probably one of my first sort of maybe challenges in like, you know, talking about like physical challenge and stuff. There was this lake, you know, in front of our camp. And I think it was like this huge challenge, and not many people really have there to swim the lake from, you know, from one end to the other and back. And that in that period of my life, I did swim. So I don't know why I remember I decided to, you know, I'll do it. I'll swim it. So I remember I did it and I was able to do it, came back. And after that, I remember I became the man, you know, like all of the staff and everybody was like, who's the man, Mauricio? Who's the man? And I became, you know, this the Mexican who swam across the lake. And yeah, I don't know.
That's cool. I'm imagining them like, you know, lifting you up on their shoulders, like yeah, little 10-year-old Mauricio with like your beard on still.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So I guess, you know, fast forwarding back to catching up with running about 12 years ago, you did your first marathon. And I'm curious to know like what that first experience was like. And if you remember how long it took you, you know, to the last couple of years and, you know, I imagine maybe you've done a few more marathons since then. And like, how has your running practice sort of evolved?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the first marathon you do it, your only intention is for you, you know, you finish it. There's no more expectations than that. So I ran it and I, you know, in Barcelona marathon, it's also not an easy one because it does have like, it's hills, but, I did it and I must have run it like maybe like a 3:40 something. And after that, I just, you know, really kept on running and now it was about, well, I'll do another marathon and I'll train harder and see how faster I can do it now. I really can't remember which marathon was the one that came right after, but yeah, I've done the Mexico City one like two times, then I've done Chicago, I've done Toronto, I've done Montreal, I've done here and there a couple more, Miami, and some others. But throughout this process, you know, well, when I came back to Mexico, I started running and I started running with a group, like the first time I ever joined a running like crew. And I really got into that approach and of the running crews that where, you know, like it's a lot about running fast and a lot about competition and a lot about how, you know, train really hard. So I there was a period where I really trained really, really hard. And it was all about that. And it was all about trying to run faster, trying to, you know, do marathons. I've done Boston. Yeah. I've done Boston, once. And everything, I guess in the marathon scene, you know, everything revolves around Boston. So, you know, it was all running, everything, all trainings and everything, you know, it was just to try to do running fast enough so that you could do Boston. And I did that, but at that time I had already, I mean, I had before, you know, all had always loved also being doing hiking and climbing and mountaineering. So once I found out that you could merge running and the outdoors, that was like, man, this is, I mean, what I've been missing on this whole thing. And this is like the intersection of two things that I love. So, that's when I switched. No, I my chip switched and I, you know, started to focus less on marathons and then got into more of like the trail running scene, and knowing that you could now run, you know, 50Ks, 80Ks and 100 miles and stuff. No, I've the longest distance I've done, it's in one shot is 100K. And then I've done some stage runs, of about 147Ks. But once I switched to trail running, I guess the doing things fast became less interesting, and then the sense of exploration became much more important to me, to a point where I didn't even really race anymore. Like I really don't know when was the last proper race I signed up for. And I just really started to dig running just to explore and running to, I mean, what I already did in the city, you know, of like going to explore a new area, that taking it to the mountains or to natural landscapes and things you could connect, go up, you know, a mountain and go down the other way and end up in this other town. And regardless of the distance, no, or the time or the days. So I switched to that, and today, I mean, running is my life, man. Running is my spiritual practice. Running is what makes me, and running has given the best things that I have in my life. No, my partner, I met her through running. My dog, Aire, came. I found her in one of my experiences. You know, what I do, Aire Libre Running, it's, you know, happened because of running and exploring. And then, you know, my best, you know, new friendships, and, you know, even being here talking to you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, and then kind of jumping back to, you know, you've been doing Aire Libre, and you get to the point where it's like, okay, I think we can do this full time. Yeah, you and the other two founders. You know, at that point, diving into it, what were some of the challenges? Had you already done some actual sort of retreats at that point?
Yeah. So our first year of existence, it was only content and stories and trying to like inspire people to be in contact with nature and more active. And after a full year of content, you know, this rule of content is king, we witnessed how it really works. So people started to ask how they could join what we were doing. And they, you know, at some point it became so frequent that we did something about it. So like a year after, we piloted our first experience. And then like a group, I don't know if you're familiar with Parkdale Roadrunners from Toronto, Michael Peak and all of that crew, 12 of them came, and then like 8-10 other Mexicans. And we went to the mountains in Oaxaca, and we designed a 6-day experience where everything that we had already been exploring in the stories and content, we sort of captured into an experience. And I mean, while we knew that it was going to be, you know, guaranteed fun because of everything that we were going to be living, we really didn't see coming the transformational power of these experiences. So when it finished, you know, and you have people crossing over this epic suspending bridge, like that last part, and they got to the other side and we gave them mezcal, everybody, like 80%, just burst into tears and started hugging us. And some participants were just giving crazy feedback and crazy, you know, like some saying that those last days had been the most alive from their entire life. And that was like completely unexpected. No? And just as we just came back from that trip, we of course got together and say, like, what happened? No, what did we do? and we said, like, well, there's something here, you know, we got to keep on exploring. And so that second year we piloted more experiences, and we started figuring out, you know, what were these elements that every experience, this transformational power happened. And so then by the third year, that's when we already, you know, had a proof of concept, you would say, and then we quit our jobs and then started working, and now with a much broader and ambitious goal of doing this like worldwide, you know, because I mean, in the end, a lot of what, no, yeah, not a lot, but like, I guess everything that we do is followed because it's things that we want to do. So, you know, I've always, I want to run in all corners of the world. So if, you know, that's why we said, like, let's go to Mongolia, let's go to Patagonia, let's go everywhere. Let's open this up and find a way to really discover the world through running and make this like more of like a global community and global project. And that's how we started it. No, of course, the last 2 years have been, you know, crazy, you know, especially with international travel. But we have been very fortunate, very, very fortunate, and you know, to find the ways to navigate through this, through, you know, being resilient, then being supported by the beautiful community that stands, you know, behind I Deliver Running. What happens is many of the participants that join us, you know, because of the power of the experience, they end up coming back, and or they want to come back eventually. So when the pandemic hit and we had, you know, we had 5 trips along the year already sold out to a lot of parts of the world, nobody asked for their money back. Nobody, you know, everybody said, like, hey guys, we want to travel with you. That's for sure. And it doesn't matter if it's this year or next or eventually. So don't worry. Like, we want to support you, and we want to keep on being part of this. So that's, you know, that was a game changer, definitely. And then all of the storytelling and, you know, how we were born, telling stories and doing content, that has also become very, very important for what we do, because we have started to work with brands and with other projects that relate to what we do, and then we've been able to also, you know, open up other streams doing that. No?
So I'm curious, like, you know, in those initial, you know, experiences that you put together, and you started to see like a profound impact it was having on people, and I'm sure just continued with all of them. You know, I think there's something really powerful of just going on a long endurance adventure with a group of people. You could not say a word to them for, you know, a couple of hours on the trail, and by the time you finish, you've got a pretty special bond. So I imagine you take that over, you know, 2, 3, 5, 6 days, and that just like grows exponentially. Aside from just like that, you know, were there things that you saw happening that you kind of learned with the experience that like, oh, this helps that experience or this doesn't help? And like, how did that sort of evolve to sort of, you know, imagine you as like a guide or a facilitator of like this container that's traveling together?
Yeah. It's funny because I say it this way. I mean, I would love to, but it's not true. And I actually, I guess I'm more happy that it's not that way, but we don't hold any secret or, you know, technological patent to what we do or the secret sauce for the, you know, for the Coca-Cola soda or nothing. We don't have any, you know, high entry barrier to what we do. So the DNA and what makes the transformative experiences happen, it's just the most, going back to doing the most basic and elemental things that we have done as a species, no? It's movement, no? Is we integrate a lot of mindfulness practices all across the experiences, pretty much every morning, setting the tone. We share a lot of worth, no? We share during healthy, no, big table meals. We share our worth with our fellows, share emotions, open up our hearts and let emotions out. then every time that we can, and it's more often than not, we also engage in spirit, in local spiritual practices. Because we tend to mostly go to territories of native tribes, and we like to learn a lot from that and take a lot of that knowledge and integrate it, because it's very definitely very valuable. So in Mexico, if you come, you'll probably be taking part in a temazcal ceremony, like sweat lodges, and so these very basic things of mindfulness, movement, community, eating healthy, opening up your heart and emotion, and doing spiritual practices over, over 3 days, and if you ramp it up to 8 days, has the impact that no antidepressant can have. No, and I tell you this, man, like we have had many participants, tell us that, when precisely in the spaces when we open up the words and we share our the word, many have told us, I've been a clinical depressive for 3 years, 4 years, no matter what medicines I've taken, I haven't felt happy as I have felt, in this 3 days. So I mean, it's crazy how basic and how simple it is and how powerful it is. And at the same time, it's it's sort of frustrating because, we're trying to solve all of these mental health issues with drugs and with stuff that it's just a band-aid to a problem that's not the way you approach it. You shouldn't approach it. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that. The secret sauce is just like, be really human with other humans, right? Like just move in nature and share that experience. And it's really sad how lacking that is for most people's lives. And I think even myself included, like I really crave so much more of that. Being in nature more, just being, nature just doesn't rush, right? And the pace of that, we're very disconnected from in a lot of ways. And so to sort of reconnect with like a more natural pace with the wind, with the water, with the earth, with other people, I think, like you said, it's pretty simple, but it's, I think one, it's just not that common. And in a world of like crazy innovation, technology, so much gear and cool things to buy, biohacking, I imagine there's also like to pay to go, run in nature is also like a little bit counter to sort of the direction of a lot of, tourism and just the industry and our culture. I feel like, you're slowing things down, I imagine. And just like, and that's where our real connection is also like comes from.
Yeah. And to add to that is, when we go to our experiences in Bolivia or in Peru or many of the places, we connect and we really, really integrate with the local communities. So which many mostly when we're deep in the mountains, they definitely live a connected and much, much more different life that most of us in a more of a Western world and cities and stuff. So being exposed to that and being, and witnessing how their lifestyle also gives you tons of perspective, tons of perspective, because, the blind and dumb way to see it, you would say, and to judge it, you say, oh, look, they live in like in just a house with just one room and so they're so poor or what, but man, it's the other way around. You just spend a day or two with them. They have the richest lives you could have, and you a lot of people see it and eventually you go back and you question stuff from your from what you do and your day to day. So,
yeah, I'm definitely trying to like recalibrate that on my side. I just spent 4 days and nights just up the coast by myself on a campsite in a van and just like meditating and reading and walking on the beach. And it was just so nourishing and so needed. But I think in the running, you know, sphere, looking at somebody like Eliud Kipchoge, who is like obviously an incredible performer, but like you look at the camp he set up and the community that he's got there, it's so modest and so simple, really. And you just see these guys like, you know, the absolute best in the world with smiles on their faces. And it's just, they're keeping it so simple and there's something so beautiful about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I love that about Kipchoge, his smile. And you've probably read it in Born to Run and all, but you know, this philosophy of you become a better runner by becoming just a better human, no? And someone that smiles, no? And the power of what this, you know, cultivated energy can give you, and not only in running, but in general, in whatever thing you do, no?
Yeah, absolutely. So as the, you know, experiences have grown and you've gone all over the world, it seems like you've got, you know, different people leading and co-leading, you know, in all these different areas. And, you know, I think that's interesting. It's almost like there seems to be like a family that you've got like worldwide now.
Yeah, that's been something amazing to see happen, because the community that's been built around it, you know, you come to an experience and then you're, you know, really transformed or impacted and changed. So we remain very close to the project, and many of the people that have been to our experiences end up like wanting to, you know, I help out or bring that to their own localities or so we've been able to some degree, you know, to like partner a lot with past participants and do now experience through them, no? Through participants that have been maybe two or three times and like fully understand and grasp what it entails. And that's how we've been, you know, we've done stuff in Jackson with Alex Dickinson, who has been in our experiences for long, is our podcast host, and you know, with Gordon in California, doing stuff in Joshua Tree and this other area,
Arrowhead.
Lake Arrowhead. That is our secret sauce, the people, no? Because again, you can do what we do and, you know, pretty much anyone can do it, sure. But not anyone is friend and close to Alex Dickinson. Not anyone is friend and close to Yannick Wende, our host in Bolivia. And these are extremely and amazing human beings that we especially pay attention to know and to connect with, so that, you know, that's definitely, we guarantee that there's this shared vision and understanding of the whole project. And then, you know, you can pretty much let things happen and guarantee something very unique will happen as if we were doing it ourselves, no? So that curation of partners and people that have tapped into the project and just helped it make it even stronger and bigger and more interesting. I mean, we had our experience in Scotland last September. I was going to go, but again, you know, COVID things happening, I was not able to. But our local partner there, George, did probably and it hasn't come out, it will be there very soon, the video of that, like a short documentary about that experience. But judging from the video, from the feedback, from participants that had been on other experiences from us, but also went to that, I mean, it probably has been one of the best experiences we have ever done. And no one from our core team was there. It was just, right. It was just, you know, that that magic happening, that secret sauce, the people behind it.
Yeah. And the other thing, like you mentioned as well, is like tapping into the local culture, the local sort of, you know, potentially spiritual practices. You know, I've done a couple of sweat lodges, and it can be a pretty powerful and challenging experience. You know, I wonder, are that, you know, a lot of the people coming and going on a trip, and then you do that, you know, one evening or whatever it is, you know, have these people generally done that sort of thing before? And do you find that again, just sort of like supercharges this sort of like bond and openness?
Most people have not when they come to our experiences, and many people, you know, maybe read what's going to happen. Yeah. And although, you know, although it says and all, you know, you don't really read deep into it. So I really think many people read Temazcal, and then their brain processes and thinks it's mezcal. So, oh yeah, we're going to drink mezcal. Awesome. But then we're there, and you're like, okay, guys, are you ready for the Temazcal ceremony? We're going to, you know, basically conceptually, we're going to go back into our mother's earth womb in this dark, low, uncomfortable, humid, you know, space. And we're going to be there for, you know, a long period of time. And it's going to get, you know, very, very, very warm. And it really depends on who we work with, who leads the ceremony, you know. It'll be differently, but man, I mean, of course, here and there, you know, some people end up, you know, coming out after the first door, or not everyone like goes through the whole thing, but most, like 90% of the people that participate end up going through the whole process. And that, but the Temazcal, I think, is also like the cherry on the top of an experience. It really consolidates everything that had been happening, and it's a hell of a way to sort of close an experience, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful, and I think that's so cool. But yeah, it's hard, you know, and it's funny to think about, like, you know, I've been like really diving into like Taoism a lot recently, and so much of like the philosophy, and like, you know, Alan Watts talking about it is like, or Lao Tzu even, it's like, you can talk about the Tao, but that's not the Tao. You know, you can read about a Temazcal ceremony or watch it on YouTube, but until you're actually in there, you just can have no idea what that's like, right? But yeah, I think that's cool. So how's it been in terms of, you know, you're creating this community, this global family, you've got these experiences, and they're beautifully documented, which I think really, you know, as much as possible, like, you're telling the story of and creating a feeling of what that might be like. And it looks, you know, inspiring, aspirational. It looks beautiful, like the landscapes, and, you know, you get glimpses of these different components of what an experience looks like. And I imagine that's been pretty invaluable for you guys, bringing on partners in terms of brands and helping to sort of bring them to life and facilitate more. You know, how has that process been in terms of finding those partners to help bring that to life?
Yeah, so I mean, that's with Dan, our co-founder, with his, you know, artistic you know, way of understanding and seeing the world. You know, our visual and our approach to documenting what we do, you know, it's like very led and very comes a lot from his perspective and mine, and. Yeah, I mean, and you know this, you know, we love to collaborate. You know, we're always constantly, you know, trying to find anything, you know, people, projects, brands who we admire and who we think we could do something with, and build, you know, and just really have fun creating stuff. You know, so we're always on the lookout for that. You know, and with. With creatives and photographers or videographers and all, it's the same approach. You know, we you know, we're always on the lookout for people doing really interesting things visually and creatively, and then yeah, it's basically, you know, when we have the chance, like into pretty much bring them and integrate them into the different experiences that we have and let them, I mean, they're already sort of curated by this aesthetic and we just really let them do their own magic. And that's how we've been able to produce a lot of really, really great content and different as well. And it's, I mean, it's also the interconnection of our passions there, you know, like both, because the experience is the setting, right? And then that's something that plays a lot to our advantage. Because I mean, if you want to photograph some running shots, I mean, if you don't have an experience, well, you might, you know, go to a forest, bring a couple of models and have them run. Hey, run from here to there, back and forward, and do it. And you know, of course, some amazing stuff can come out of it, but you're some degree limited, no? But if you have an experience that lasts, you know, for the full days, and it's really, you know, it's diverse, and a lot of stuff is happening, you know, from when you wake up to when you sleep, then there's the perfect setting for a creative to pretty much, you know, let himself or herself loose and do magic, you know? So yeah, you'll see it on again. No? You'll see it on this last documentary about Scotland, the creative team that got behind the cinematographer, the director, and all. What I'm telling you, you'll be able to see it there. No,
is that going to come out pretty soon?
Yeah. Should be coming in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you know, I was thinking like, so I hosted like a small little kind of triathlon weekend last summer, and it was pretty casual. Alex is actually there. I had just met him like a couple weeks before that, but it was really cool to hang out with him.
Nice.
And, you know, we ended up going on a pretty long ride through Joshua Tree, which is actually a lot more hilly than we expected. And, so one of the guys who is out there kind of ended up bonking like, you know, 2/3 of the way through the ride. And it was just a little bit beyond where he was, but you know, the group buoyed him and came through, and it was quite a like powerful experience. I'm wondering like how often you see something like that happen where somebody like is just like, I can't do it. You know, I can't go on, and they have to overcome, you know, whether it's a mental block or it's maybe like a physical challenge that just seems too scary or too big for them, you know, in the moment, but like through the group, through the guidance, you know, they do overcome. And it's just like, you know, how often do you see that happening? And what is that like from your perspective?
Yeah, that happens a lot. And it's amazing to see when they're able to, because then you get to hear like, you know, this is the first mountain I've ever really, you know, gone up in my life. And I didn't know, I had no idea. I mean, I thought I was going to die, but look, I'm here. And suddenly, and that opens up, of course, you know, a lot of mental strength for all these individuals who, you know, now they know that they can do that, and, you know, and they can do much more. But I guess, yeah, we design the experience, and you see it, you know, in our website and everything for all levels of runners, you know? So in a group, you can have, you know, a super fast ultra runner, and at the same time have someone that's just like, you know, starting to run, that's maybe done a couple of 10Ks. But both mentally, our speech and the mindset we put participants on is that our experiences are not racing experiences. So people, when you come to an experience with us, you're not there to show how fast or strong or nothing, you know? There's many great spaces to do that, no? But this is not that space. So that helps a lot precisely on both ends to lower those barriers, where on the fast extreme, they're like, okay, well, you know, I don't have to, I mean, I forget about showing off or whatever. And more than I'm going to be a bit of a take leader and take care that the rest of the group, I can come. So they become more like pillars and supporters. And on the other end, people who are just starting to run, where that will usually not have this mindset of, oh, I don't want to join because I'm going to be slowing the group. You know, I don't want to make expose myself and be stressed about it. By us telling them that and reinforcing it throughout the whole trip and every single run, then they also can lower their guards and just really say, okay, I mean, no pressure's off me. I can go. And not only can I go, but I'm going to be taken care of by the whole group, and even more so, and especially by the people who are fast, because the ones who are fast or the ones who are leading, we precisely, you know, tell them, you're let's mark the roads. Let's run back and check out how the rest of the group is. We're moving, and we are all responsible of all each other, no? And so it's beautiful to see it, no? Because in the end, you know, everybody's, you know, you get to see how we all wait. Everybody waits for the ones who are behind them, the ones who are precisely maybe going through this mental struggle of I'm dying. But suddenly they hear from the distance that the whole group is just there cheering and sending lots of love and energy and people manage, no? And yeah, that's one of the most fun things too of these experiences, no? That level of integration, and no matter, you know, if you're Killian Jordanet or if you are, you know, just a regular Joe. No?
Yeah, or me. but yeah, I think as well, like, those experiences are really powerful, obviously for the person potentially going through them and overcoming this. But in a group setting, I think there's so much healing that comes for everyone witnessing something like that and potentially playing a support role in something like that. You know, it's such a, you know, like, organism of a group and those experiences. And I haven't done it as much in the, you know, I've done a little bit in through movement, but a lot of my training has really been solo. And, you know, for me, I'm really looking to make an adjustment with that going into this year. But in, like, you know, some therapy sessions and whatnot, you know, there's some retreat things I've gone to where it's like, it is the group, and you just, like, heal so much from seeing other people be vulnerable and overcome challenges. And it's just, like, so powerful and something that we might not know about, like, going into it. You know, you might think, like, oh, I'm a great runner, I'm going to go and just crush it. But, like, you know, you're going to grow from other people growing as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, I guess, you know, travel is kind of opening back up for a lot of people in some countries around the world. Do you have, you know, ambitions on places you haven't run that you want to go explore or potentially put on experiences?
Oh, yeah. So many, man. so many. But, yeah, I mean, the year is just starting, and we've done in January our Guatemala, like, the Land of Volcanoes experience, which was done, and it was pretty epic. And then right now we're 20 days away from our Peru experience in the Sacred Valley. And then, yeah, we have, like, hopefully a very busy year with a retreat in Costa Rica, in the French Alps for July, in Jackson Hole, and that we'll be doing again. We got a couple of others in the U.S. in the Flagstaff, Sedona, Grand Canyon area, Patagonia. We will be doing by the end of the year. Then our staple one, the Oaxaca Day of the Dead. Our Scotland, and we'll be repeating Scotland in the Highlands also at end of the year, and that's how it looks for this year. You know, hopefully they all happen. And then after, I mean, what we do usually is we like every year, there's some experiences that we keep, but we also always integrate new. And I mean, me personally, on my bucket list of what I really want us to do is go to Mongolia, as I've mentioned before. Because I mean, it seems just such a interesting, remote, exotic place with like a, you know, so interesting culture. I really want to do Morocco because I think Morocco is also like a great playground and has a lot of things that we explore. In the Atlas Mountains. I think those two would be like my next experiences that I would really like to see happening.
Do you have people come and be like, hey, I think like this would be a great location, like these elements are here, and like they can come up from that way as well?
Yeah. A lot of people, as I said, a lot of people join an experiences and then say, either I have been or I live in this place, and I think it would be amazing to do it here. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's how our offering, we have been, you know, sort of deciding it a lot through what, you know, our community says, no? Like, where do you think we should be doing an experience, you know, in the following years? And that's a lot of our information is on the community, no? On what the community, like, what wishes to explore. And
yeah, that's cool. So, you know, we were kind of chatting before about like a cycling retreat. And so I've booked a spot at the end of June for, it'll be like 3 nights and sort of like 3.5-4 days. And so I feel like I have to ask you, you know, I know you kind of like told me your non-secret sauce, but like, if you have any like tips or anything from your experience, you know, to keep in mind, something I might not think about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, knowing you a bit and that this is something that you're doing because it, you know, you love it as well. I really don't think, you know, there's much things that I could say that it's just like, because you're going to do it, you're doing it out of your heart, and probably the energy that you're going to put into it and that you're going to emanate and it's going to be witnessed and felt, you know? So, you know, aside from, you know, I guess I would say that, no, find the spaces for everyone to be able to talk and open up. Because that's something and even force it. No, we sort of force it. Because if you leave it up to it, people like, hey, who wants to share their, a highlight? Maybe two will talk or three. But if you really like, okay, we're gonna go around the table and everybody's gonna like, whatever you want to say, it could be something very, very, you know, superficial. Or if you want to really go deep, please go deep. No, and I think that those are really rich, powerful moments that I would invite you to try it out, and especially when you're closing the day, right? So, so that people have already gone through a lot. I think that's very special, and you should try it out. No, and and I wish I'll start cycling, and then I'll join your next.
Yeah. Yeah. And since you're such an epic swimmer, obviously, you know, then you just got to put the three together.
Yeah. Well, I haven't swim in probably since I crossed that lake. So.
Yeah. Well, swimming has been a challenge for me the last year, but I can be slowly getting a little bit better and more comfortable. Yeah. So in the last like year, I guess, I mean, I'm sure you've been working with Lululemon, but you became an ambassador as well. And I'm curious, like, how that's been like on an individual level to now sort of also like have that, you know, it really dovetails with what you're doing with your business, but it's also your own name, your own journey to some extent, and being involved with things like the Speed Project and that as well. Like, how does that sort of individual journey with running and with these brands, like, how's that been going?
I mean, it's been a blessing. It's been, it's happening, you know, it's sometimes I don't even like sort of even like understand why, you know, I really feel very lucky and fortunate to be able to, you know, be part of the Lululemon running global team or ambassador. I mean, fortunate as well, because the general philosophy and approach of how Lululemon relates to people and all, it's so natural, and it's like, you know, I guess I'm there because they see that what I'm doing like has a good different perspective and adds value to I guess the running world, and they just, you know, just gotta be doing what I do, and they support it, and they support it with everything that they can, and so it's amazing, man. It's so good, and it's just starting, man. So I'm really looking forward to what with the support with, I mean, because it's also like a company that it's growing so much and doing a lot, so with to have that level of support as an individual and also like as a tiny company, you know, owner, it's great. With the Speed project and all other events and that me and individually I've been able to relate, I guess it's again, I'm really happy. I mean, it feels that I'm, as I told you, like I think I'm rather, you know, I make friends easily and so I tend to, you know, meet people and just like contributing and with the energy of trying to add value and just elevate everything that we can do together, I think has probably put me in those positions. No, so I'll be sort of, yeah, I'll be working for in the upcoming Speed project, you know, helping the team and just being present and adding some good vibes to it. And we're just starting, man. This is just starting. I mean, as I say, we've been with Daily Libre running, we've been, I mean, seriously, just like 4 years behind it. And in the macro, you know, perspective and the macro game of life, you know, 4 years is nothing. We're just starting to, this is starting, and we, you know, have a lot of, I guess, a lot of plans and a lot of, you know, ambition and just drive to keep on creating and adding more value to not only the running world, but to a lot of what this, all of this lifestyle involves, no? So we'll, yeah, it's fun, and it's going to get even more so.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, it's great to have that perspective. I find like, you know, with the way the speed of everything and myself being 36 and feeling like I've had a career and now trying to kind of start something new, you know, the patience is a challenge. It's hard not to be like, okay, I launched it on Monday, this should be like popping by Friday, you know, but to have like, okay, well, you know, we're 4 years in and it's just starting, you know, it's like refreshing to sort of have that, you know, like long, big zoomed out view of like, you know, you're building this foundation, you've got tons of seeds planted, and already, you know, I'd be curious to know how many people have attended experiences in 4 years, but, you know, positively affecting and inspiring a lot of people's lives through that, and knowing like, just imagine in 10 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's important to have that perspective zoom out. And I mean, I think we're really, really biased, our this last, I guess, generation of, you know, entrepreneurs and all, we're completely biased by, you know, technological, by tech companies and software companies that, you know, a couple have like grown and escalated like never in the history of life, you know? But that's very unique to a certain product or a certain thing. But I think most, and that's, you know, those are the stories that, yeah. So I guess a lot of people really, really think or are stressed out or think they're failing because they haven't you know, in 2 years, they're not $100 million company in 2 years. You know, that's not real. No, I mean, it is for that pocket. I mean, of course, no, if you go into, you know, software or tech company, that has its own speed, that has its own, you know, lane, that has its own, but I think overall we're right now all biased into how fast things happen and or should happen, and I think it's really healthy to try to, you know, understand that more, to look into, like, you know, what companies have been around for 100 years, what companies have been around for like legacy time, what has that story been, and how that arc has been, because I also think that if you grow, and this is like a general nature rule, no? Like the fastest you go up, as fast as you can go down, no? Mm-hmm. While if you, you know, go take it easy, low and steady, you're building a as you said, no? Like a foundation bigger and bigger that it's going to probably, you know, be, you know, if things align and you and all, it'll be hard for you to fall as quickly as you went up. No? I don't know, just thoughts. But
yeah, no, absolutely though. And I think that's a good point. And I can't remember the quote, but it's something about like a tree can only grow as tall as its roots can support, you know, and like taking that approach, you know, to, you know, a tree's not going to just like go 100 feet up in the air with no roots, because that's not going to be sustainable. So, you know, trying to stay more connected to that sort of natural pace of things rather than the warped idea of pace that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you have anything else to share that you're up to? It's exciting that I don't know about before we wrap it up.
Well, hopefully I got plans for my birthday in 1st of April. I want to cross the from ocean to ocean, the Baja Peninsula, like from Cabo Pulmo to Todos Santos, across the Sierra de las Lagunas. Like as a, you know, adventure challenge thing.
It's how, like long, how long is that?
Like 140K. Thinking of maybe doing it in 2 days or three. It really depends on how it feels. So that's, you know, hopefully will be happening in a month from now. And that's just after the speed project. So that's going to happen on an individual level. Well, the other, we're putting this, the Scotland documentary out soon. So that as soon as it's out, I'll share it with you and out with the world. And other than that, man, I mean, exciting about still, I mean, the year starting, we have a lot of experiences coming up and it's going to get fun.
Yeah. Well, it sounds great. It sounds like a fun birthday celebration as well. A certain type of fun anyways.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on and for sharing. And, you know, we've been trying to figure out some way to collaborate, and I'm sure we will when things fall together, and I look forward to that.
Yeah, man. Thank you for opening the space for me and for Aire Libre. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be doing a lot of stuff. We're, as I said, we're just starting, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look forward to it. Well, thanks so much again.
See you soon, man.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Whether you listen to it on Spotify, Apple, or through our website, it would be great to hear your feedback and thoughts. If you're able to leave a review, it'll really help us share the message and share the podcast with more people. Thank you.